Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This thing on.
See, now I'm getting mad.
Because it's getting ready to be on.
I want my whiskey to bite me a little bit.
This is the kind of psychopath that I hang out with.
I got beat up outside of a Denny's.
The Rock Pile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Gear.
He likes to get in the X's nose. Something I can't do with this podcast because I drink too much.
Chris Kruger.
My rollerblading blonde mohawk producer.
The pettiest, hardest drinking Bills podcast.
I'm an adult. I know what I'm about. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. I am your host, Bill season ticket holder Drew Gear. That's my producer, Chris Kruger. And the Buffalo Bills are AFC East champions. Hands up. Woo! That's what I'm talking about. Give me some skin. Oh, what a weekend. What a weekend it was.
Great
oh,
that
no.
they won the division, but, you know, I think we were equally as hurt about Alabama last night. I got a drink of Seagram's because I took them to win. And not only did I take them to the win, I put a total of 100 of my own money and another 100 of free money from FanDuel on the game. So, bottoms up to some Nick Saban giving up 20 points in the fourth quarter, which is just unheard of.
See, now, normally an Alabama loss in the title game would hurt my feelings, but watching you suck down a wine cooler, I don't know. That just seems to balance the equation for me.
It's passion fruit mango.
That sounds terrible. I'm going to sit over here with my moose head and just enjoy the rest of my night because we're here talking about the Buffalo Bills victory in week 18. First of all, as Iman put it in a DM to me after the game, easily one of the best tailgates we've ever thrown. He said it was championship caliber tailgating. Hugo got sent off well. We had Mike from Rochester who came out. We warmed people. We cooked and served 15 pounds of brisket. Chris, have you ever seen 15 pounds of brisket in person? Cooked brisket.
I don't think so. Maybe this summer when I go to Kansas City to visit my brother, but...
Yeah, and it disappeared.
Yeah, people have already been hitting up our DMs to come to the tailgate for the wild card.
As they should, because we can feed, shelter, and heat everybody. You're dumb if you don't show up. I mean, hey...
Potter's coming, right?
Everyone's coming.
All right, so
the whole crew's going to be here.
You know, I'm not going to be there for the tailgating portion, but if you do want to see somebody get set on fire, come on out.
And yeah, watch, Potter's due. He hasn't set himself on fire yet this year.
Watch James Potter set himself on fire.
It was easily one of the best tailgates we've thrown all year. But the game and the what took place and the implications of it was so much better. Here is your Week 18 recap. Buffalo Bills 27, the Jets 10. I've got your stats of the game. Zach Wilson, 7 of 20 for 35%, 87 yards, 1 touchdown, 8 sacks, 66 passer rating. Josh Allen, 24 of 45, 53%, 239 yards, 2 touchdowns, no sacks, and 83.5 passer rating. These are the numbers getting all the press, the yardage disparities. Total yards, 424 for Buffalo, just 53 for the New York Jets. Net passing yards, 254 for Buffalo, just 5 for the New York Jets. Devin Singletary, 22 touches, 9 plays, which is 41% of all his touches, with either a touchdown or a gain of more than 5 yards. Stephon Diggs, 14 targets, 9 catches, 81 yards, 1 ridiculous touchdown. Wide receiver Gabe Davis, 14 targets, 3 catches, 39 yards, third highest receiving yards on the team, most drops on the team. Linebacker Matt Milano, 93% of the snaps, 2 pressures, 1 sack, 3 solo tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and 2 passes broken up. The Jets' offensive line, the running backs produced 0.63 yards per carry. They allowed 12 quarterback hits and 10 total sacks. 10 tackles for loss allowed by 8 different players on the Buffalo Bills defense. Hey, Chris, this game, it was close on the scoreboard and in the minds of maybe some of the more nervous portions of our fan base, but it was so desperate when you look at what actually took place on the field. One of the reasons for that is that, well, the Bills, their offense was kind of sloppy. I mean, the Gabe Davis experience, this was the game, Chris. If there was ever a game where they were going to say, let's feature Gabe Davis and see what happens, this was the game against a bad defense where he could have taken the bull by the horns and become our wide receiver number 2. 3 catches on 14 targets.
Gabe Davis was targeted 14 times?
14 times! And the hilarious part is, it's not like he didn't get open. He got open for routes that would have given him touchdowns. He just didn't get targeted on those plays. Instead, he got targeted every time Josh Allen got a bug up his ass. He threw the ball at Gabe Davis. And Gabe Davis, he only got credited for 3 drops. I feel like myself and anybody else who watched it from the seats, it had to feel like more than that. It had to be. Jets cornerback Bryce Hall. He's been one of the few effective defenders they've had in the secondary all year. He was all over Davis. And he just made sure that he wasn't able to make easy catches. I mean, to that end, Hall was on him for 9 of his 14 targets and only allowed 2 catches for all of his 39 yards. When he did get burned, yeah, they went for yardage, but most of the time he didn't. And he at least made Gabe Davis work for it. I'm pretty disappointed by that, Chris. The fact that they finally...
You're always disappointed.
No, but they did the thing. They did the thing we've all been screaming for. Make Gabe Davis wide receiver number 2. And they gave him wide receiver number 2. Fuck, wide receiver number 1 targets. And it just... When you pair his numbers up against Stephon Diggs, you realize how big the gap is in talent there, right?
Yeah.
Here's a guy who with 14 targets turned it into 1 game-changing play and a whole bunch of receptions for meaningful yardage. Here's a guy who you targeted 14 times and I give him credit. The touchdown wasn't his fault. He stepped out of bounds, sure, but Josh Allen threw that thing. That's an ill-advised pass. It was a laser. It found his hands somehow. But it wasn't a good situation for him to be catching a touchdown anyway. I know because it was in the end zone in front of us. I don't know. And if I, because Chris, you know I don't like to dwell, especially in moments like this, on bad things.
Oh, you don't like to dwell. Yeah.
Let's talk about my blow up about Matt Hawk.
Matt Hawk.
Hack. This is the difference. If you follow us on Twitter at Rockbell Report, that's the difference between Sunday Drew and Tuesday Drew. Tuesday Drew realizes that Matt Hack has value. Sunday Drew wanted him literally thrown out of a moving vehicle. What changed my mind? I saw those 2 punts, Chris, and I...
Is there any chance that Scottish Hammer is playing on Saturday?
I don't think so. And the reason why is because when you look at what he brings to the kicking game, he just has value. It's intrinsic value, but it's value.
Because we're talking kicking game where he doesn't actually kick.
But he holds.
Yes.
And for anyone
that
who doesn't...
kicking game.
And anybody who doesn't think that matters, look at former Bill Corey Bohorquez. We didn't like that. We said, oh, he's got a hammer, but he sucks at punting sometimes. And we cut him. And we signed Hack. And everyone goes, oh, he sucks at punting too. And I go, yeah, well, Jason Sanders just hit a Pro Bowl season with him as his holder. Well, the very next season, he loses his holder. And he not only misses the Pro Bowl, but costs them games because of missed field goals. Then you look at where Corey Bohorquez went. Corey Bohorquez went to Green Bay. And Mason Crosby had one of the worst seasons of his entire career. Remember that Bengals game that wouldn't end because neither the rookie kicker from Cincy and Mason Crosby, NFL veteran, neither one of them could sink a field goal.
Yeah, you got to be pretty bad at holding if a veteran kicker like Crosby can't overcome that
worst season ever. For that guy,
it's talked about on here of how much I listen to the Herd. That was talked about on the Herd this season is Crosby's kicking, and there was no mention of the holder because we're all acknowledge jerk-offs. That
we don't acknowledge that. But if you talk to a single player who's actually done the job, they go, oh, "Well, 90% of that's that guy." So we have a kicker who's thriving. Because we have a good holder. Chris, in a playoff game where that field goal might make the difference, you're not switching now. Right? This is just, I think it's for Scottish Hammer's here for familiarity. That's it. Just because, hey, if something happens to our guy, we need you. But hopefully we never do. And then Josh Allen's decision making. I mean, first of all, there's no quarterback in the NFL who can do what Josh Allen does. Not right now. What, stiff arm Quinnen Williams and then carry a linebacker like a cape? Like a cape. Well, you throw a toe-tap touchdown into the end zone to Stephon Diggs. Get out of here. Take all your bullshit and pack. People go, oh, well, but he does this, and he's not so accurate. Fuck you. You can't make that play. Chris, everyone's going to get mad. I'm just dropping liberal curses on the podcast. Don't care. That's how... He wasn't perfect in this game either. I watched a couple of those drops by Gabe Davis and some of the throws that he didn't catch were just where you could see Josh get impatient and then his mechanics break down, but he's still like, I got a gun. I'm going to sling it. And he would just throw it at a wide receiver. This stopped being football and it turned into dodgeball. And he started throwing it at our wide receivers who just tried. They just made an attempt, barely. It's hilarious, especially in cold weather. Can you imagine getting hit by a Josh Allen pass, Chris? Like 10 yards from the line of scrimmage and he just fires one sidearm at you.
I have experienced that sort of.
The Mario Granada pass.
Thank you. Catching a ball from Mario Granada of hashtag sports.
Yeah, you know, he played D3. You know, real illustrious.
Well, he does have power in his throw. I don't know if you've ever played catch with him. I know you're quite the scared athlete.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. No, because I'm not dumb. I'm drinking. If I'm 12-pack deep, I'm not stepping in front of a throw like that. But so here's the thing. There were times where you'd see Josh on cork one deep because he thought he saw a little daylight and said, screw it, I want to win. Allen, over 20 air yards, 1 for 11. But from 10 to 19, he was 5 of 8 for 80 yards and a touchdown with no picks. That is where the Bills have to find a way to live. Is in that box because teams aren't giving us the deep throw. And even when he gets it, half the time it's into the wind and he can cut the wind, just not with any. Chris, he doesn't have a burner. I think he's still used to John Brown being out there where he can just uncork it and let that guy go get it. That guy wasn't out there on Sunday. So, well, there's obviously things you'd like to see cleaned up. Our team won. They won where they needed to, on the defensive front and on the offensive line.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So, Chris, were there things you'd like to see cleaned up for the Buffalo Bills in this last frame of the season? Our team won when it needed to, and they won where they needed to, which was on the offensive line and in the defensive front. And to help us expand on a little bit of what we saw in regards to that, I'd like to bring in a guest who, in his rookie season... helped found himself in a similar situation back in 1995, the last time the Bills clinched the division at home in front of their fans, albeit, you know, he was on the field, not drinking a beer like I was in the stands. Mr. John Fina of the Off Tackle Podcast. How are you, sir?
Hey, fellas. It's great to be here. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay? Am I echoing, echoing, echoing?
No, no, you're coming in hot, John. For those of you who live under a rock, John Fina, former Buffalo Bills left tackle, host of the Off Tackle with Joe Miller on the Buffalo Rumblings Network. He's an IPA and bourbon appreciator, which I appreciate about him. When I first met you at O'Neill's, I told a story about wearing a Speedo and the look of disgust on your face. And then the fact that you just openly, like, you were like, oh, when I made a comment, I was like, yeah, I introduced my wife to you. And I was like, oh, I married up. And you were like, I just wanted to hear you say it before I said anything. I love that you're a straight shooter. It's one of my favorite things about you, and it's one of my favorite things about your show.
Well, you know, that comes from the crucible of playing football. Right? You just don't have time. You realize that for years, in order to get to that level of play, you've taken more slings and arrows from coaches and media. And, you know, I can't tell you how many coaches I've had scream in my face, tobacco juice and tobacco crumbs and residue. And, you know, you just kind of become, you get a little crusty maybe, and then you sort of like expect the rest of the world to have a little bit thicker skin. So even if they don't, the best way to find out is you tell somebody that their girlfriend or wife is a hell of a lot prettier than they are. And if they, you know, if they crumble and cry like you did, then I mean, you're soft.
Listen, that night was a blast, and I'm happy that you chose this time. I mean, you picked the right time to get into the podcast game. The Bills
didn't pick it. Joe Miller picked me. I came kicking and screaming.
See, and I love that because the Bills have won the division for the second time in 2 years. And it comes on the back of a game. First of all, I like the fact that you say kicking and screaming. Joe, I've seen both of you in person. I don't think Joe could drag you anywhere. I'm just saying, for your age, you're doing well. You're still doing pretty well.
I appreciate that. I mean, you know, I'm light enough that he could drag me somewhere. Did you just call me fat? Because that's kind of the way I took it. And I'll be contacting HR.
HR? Podcast? Chris, can you imagine if there's a podcast HR?
I'd put you at the head of it.
We'd be fired.
You guys would be buried.
We'd be fired immediately. So a lot like back in 95, though, this game, things weren't perfect on offense, but when the dust settles.
Now, I don't know what you were talking about, by the way. I joined the Bills in 92, so you've got something sideways.
No. You joined in 92. It was back in 95 when you were on the field for them, though, and I remember that because I remember 92 because you had one of the AFC championship rings. You showed it to me at the bar.
Yeah, it's right over here.
And I was just like, well, that's crazy. I just wish we could see one from this century. Like this, this century would be nice for our players. Like that would be good. So everybody kind of did enough. And I watched your show this week. It was phenomenal. I'd urge everybody to go check it out because he did some really great stuff. I mean, there's a few.
What's the name of the show?
The Off Tackle with John Fina.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a
YouTube
great
and platforms everywhere.
I love it. When they go live, you guys can comment. You guys can ask questions. John does a really good job. Our listeners will appreciate this, of answering your questions in a way that's just slightly less salty than I would. Just slightly. Just a little. Mm-hmm. Chris said we would never take phone calls because he's like, you're too much of a dick. You wouldn't be able to pull
it
off.
I would have to agree with that. So, I mean, no. Okay.
But you do a great job of answering your listeners' questions. And so I read some offensive line stats, some really ugly stuff about the New York Jets at the top of the show. Mm-hmm. When you look at a team like the Jets and what they put on the field on Sunday, when the gap between starters and backups isn't supposed to be the world's apart. It's not supposed to be chasmic. But they found it almost impossible to orchestrate any kind of offense in this game. And so have you, first of all, have you ever been a part of a game like that where just everything up front, whether it's your fault or not, everything that you guys were trying to do just didn't work?
Well, more than just one game. I mean, my entire season last year in Buffalo, 2001, right, with Greg Williams. I mean, we felt like the only way we could win a game is if the other team's bus crashed into, you know, Lake Erie. And there was like multiple drownings. I never felt so helpless in my entire life. It was a disaster. It wasn't even good enough to call a disaster. It was a catastrophe with a conflagration with, I mean, fuel oil poured on it, lit twice, and all the bodies were being strewn on top. It was murderous. It's a horrible place to be. And it wasn't a talent issue in that regard. And it's not always a talent issue. You know, there's so much to the melting pot of why you win and why you lose. It's belief. It's a plan. It's the offensive scheme. It's your personnel fitting into that plan. And we had none of it or less.
So when you see a quarterback like Zach Wilson in a moment like Sunday's game, I mean, there was a point. Did your heart go out to him just a little bit? Because, I mean, there was a point in the game.
No, why should it? I mean, why just the quarterback? I mean, everybody suffers. We have to pretend like he's the only one with feelings or a family.
This is why I love you.
Oh, it's somehow he's magically absolved because his offensive line is underperforming or the play calling is bad or they're missing a few pieces and they don't have a downfield threat. We're supposed to feel bad for this one guy because he's the face of the franchise. Please, either feel bad for everybody or nobody, and it's the AFC East. So I hope I shed no tears.
It was funny because in the fourth quarter of the game, when he's just getting, it was after a play where he's getting chased and he manages to throw the ball away and then just gets dragged mercilessly to the ground. And my dad, he's standing behind me in the stands, and he kind of grabs my shoulder. He goes, "Is anyone going to help that poor bastard?" And I was like, "No, Dad, there's no help for him out here. It's just this. It's just this over and over again for another 18 minutes until it's all over."
Yeah. And you know what? That's the crucible, right? So when Zach gets on his podcast, maybe he'll be a little cut and dry also.
Oh, Ed.
No, but I appreciate your your compliment to the Off Tackle show and the whole piece about bringing in some of the video. And I encourage anybody listening to your show, you know, it doesn't translate well if you're just listening, but if you have a few minutes, it's usually in the latter half of the show. What we do is we bring up a couple of plays and I kind of try to describe beyond what your emotional feel is as a fan or your pragmatic understanding of what a play is and try to dial it down in a way that people understand the technique that's involved, in a way that talks about the philosophy of the play. And it's really been fun. And for me, it's been great because it's forced me to examine parts of the game that I've ignored for a long time. So when I'm watching football, I watch it completely different, I think, and most athletes do, than the general fan. Like if you're watching football on TV, my first advice to you is that the very moment they line up, count the defensive front. Where are they? Where are they lined up? Next, count the offensive linemen. Is there a tight end? Is there not a tight end? Make sure you know the down and distance. And on the snap of the ball, look at the first uncovered offensive lineman from the center. It's usually a guard. And on the snap of the ball, that guard will tell you whether it's a run or a pass. Okay? And if you watch the quarterback drop back to hand off, and you don't see the line play when it breaks for 12 yards, offensive line, and broadening the scope of how you view the players, you can see two or three players or four at a time, and you'll see why the play succeeds or why it failed. And that's just the way I watch the game.
And see, and that's always interesting to me because my eyes don't leave the offensive line. I don't, because to your point, it's hard to see the entire game. So there's a lot of times people are like, "Oh, did you see that move the wide receiver?" Nope, because I was busy watching the blocking, because that's what I, when I played football, that's all I did. And when I, like, that's what I know. So I, my eyes automatically go there and I say, okay, that's what I'm most interested in. Who won there? You made a really great point in your last show. You want to see, not everybody can win on every play on the offensive line. But you want to see
you get. Yeah, no, you can. You can.
And
that's what we need to get
but
to.
But 3.5 is where the Bills currently are. 3.5 guys on average are winning their matchups.
I would argue that on average it's 4 to 4.5. But the problem is, you know, those situations where that one guy or 1.5 guys in order to meet that average of 4.5 aren't doing it on the same play.
Oh, for sure. And to your point about the breakdowns, you have a great one where you kind of highlight the 40-yard Singletary run. And you talk about how Reggie Gilliam, you highlight the job he did in that play that I think, Chris, a guy like you, who is still learning the X's and O's of football, would really benefit from. Because you get it pointed out to you, like, look, here's this linebacker scraping across. He's going to fill that hole. Reggie Gilliam digs him out, and that's the reason the play succeeds. If he doesn't do his job, that thing dies at the line.
Dies at the line. But, you know, you said digs him out, and that's the funny part. Football, you know, everybody thinks about blocking as, you know, grab this guy by the breastplate, yeah, muscle him.
Sometimes it's just being
sometimes,
there.
Sometimes you just have to be in the way.
Yes.
And I don't think Reggie Gilliam actually delivered a blow. He actually just ended up as a shield, you know, between
the
tackler and the running back.
And you know what? That's fair. So with that in mind, knowing
of course
that you
fair. Can, I said it.
See, he's the expert. Who am I? No, that's why I like talking. And that's what I like about you, John. You're straight to the point. You're a straight shooter. So I want to hear about your opinion on Spencer Brown in this game, because here's one of the things that I walk away from.
Okay.
People like Spencer Brown. Mm-hmm. Fans are very excited about Spencer Brown. We like to believe that Spencer Brown is doing a lot of the right things a lot of the time, and that's why he is holding the starting right tackle job. Mm-hmm. And we, on the whole, after seeing the fallout of games where he hasn't played, we say to ourselves, our team is better when Spencer Brown plays. So I go and I look at the numbers after this game, and I go, because I'm watching and I'm going, I don't know, he looks okay. He let up 7 pressures in this game, according to some of these analytics sites. But then watching your show, you point out that he committed one of the cardinal sins of playing offensive line, which is don't turn your back to the defense. There's on
well,
the screen pass
it
when
didn't hurt the play, right?
No,
we're talking about the screen, the Singletary.
Yes.
I mean, that's not really a function of him. It's just a function of we don't run enough screens.
Okay.
You know, there are plenty of screens that go and you get out in space and somebody comes from behind and makes a tackle. That's still not your job. So it wasn't. My question to you is, where do you stand on Spencer Brown? Because, you know, you told me what everybody else thinks. You told me that somebody here or there.
No. I think Spencer Brown is I think he's an athlete. I mean, we talked with Math Bomb, Kentley Platty. He invented the relative athletic score. Spencer Brown is tied for the highest athletic score in this. It's essentially an aggregation of athleticism, different athletic metrics based on what they put up at their pro days and combine. Mm-hmm. He said Taylor Lewan scored the highest, and he's a very good tackle. Well, Spencer Brown tied him in terms of athleticism. Now, whether his technique ever catches up to that, that's a completely different story. But I think that you've seen plays from Spencer Brown in every single game where he shows you that he can get to the second level with some speed and a little bit of tenacity. He shows a little bit of a mean streak, which I think you have to have.
Right.
And I think that when I look at him compared to Darrell Williams, I just see more finishing from Spencer Brown, and I see him getting to the second level more fluidly than I ever saw from Williams last year. Williams was great when he was asked to pass protect. Run blocking, he was pretty pedestrian, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's got good feet in a small area, but if you ask him to do a lot of things, he's just not that athletic. But you don't need the most athletic offensive line. You need big guys who have technique, leverage, who understand balance. Spencer Brown, even as a rookie, seems to have enough athleticism with the talent that he has and the technique he has that he's at least paying some dividends. But in this game, he struggled, but our offense still found a way. What do you think of his season as a whole when you look at him and what he put out there this week?
Well, you know, I can't look at it as individually. I think what he's done for the unit by moving Cody Ford out is a big plus.
Yes.
So I'm pleased as can be that Darrell Williams is playing guard as well as he is. It's hard. I don't think I ever could have played guard. You know, after as many years of tackle as I had, I understand that this team in practice rotates people across positions. I think that's brilliant. We never did that. By and large, I think he is outperforming as a rookie compared to what I would have expected. And that's really all I'm looking for right now. Look, I could probably go back, and if you gave me all 9 plays where he supposedly had pressures, I could probably tell you that, you know, 2 or 3 of them weren't really him.
Mm-hmm.
If I looked at him. I might agree entirely, but the one thing that and you mentioned it, and I think there's a huge value there, is he's a mean SOB. And one of the beauties of having John Feliciano in the lineup was he added that category, which is infectious. You know, the guy that's, you know, for lack of a better accurate description, hitting late, being vicious in a legal sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think the value that he brings with that makes him an even better player. I'm not so much concerned about him getting to level two. He does move out in space a little bit on that really cool screen they ran to the right based on a power left run. That was pretty neat. He moves well enough. You know, my concern is that his pass protection comes along. He's soft with his hands a little bit, but that's a grow-up thing. You come from Northern Iowa, and you're not playing against guys that play defensive end for the New York Jets. And mind you, this was despite their lack of success, this was a formidable front four. I mean, these guys got after it. They were really high energy, and I was impressed by the Jets front four. I don't think that's an easy group to contend with. So, you know, occasionally you'll struggle anyway against guys that you've handily beaten before. So,
he gave up a sack to Shaq Barrett in that Tampa Bay game where I don't think it was a sack, but it was a major disruption to a pass where Shaq Barrett just ran right around him. And he tried to get his mitts on him, and Shaq, being the smaller player, really violently just shoved his hands out of the way. So maybe to your point, he needs to learn a little bit of that violence at contact just to, I don't know, just to be more disruptive.
Well, the difference is, like, when you're playing, I mean, even when I played at the University of Arizona, and that's, you know, a million years ago, you had a week off every now and again, or you played against a guy who just didn't have the skill set or the tools or the burst or the, you know, and you just don't get that in the NFL week in, week out. This guy might pose a different kind of threat than the other guy, but they both are a threat. And he sets beautifully. His hands are in good position. He's a little tentative on his strike, and he needs to be affecting that guy. And I don't know how many foot pounds, you know, of energy that you need to press on a guy to affect their trajectory upfield, but he needs to get a little bit more of it. It's passable right now, and he's learning. But I mean, for me as his coach, I would focus in that area.
So at the beginning of this conversation, we were talking about Zach Wilson running for his life. And one of the biggest things was just that our defensive front seven did a number on these guys up front. Now, you've made no bones about the fact that you love Matt Milano and what he does for this front seven. Now, when you look at the way that teams are forced to play a team like Buffalo, when you see our front seven and they say, okay, they've got Ed Oliver, they've got some other rotational D tackles, Harrison Phillips is starting to come on, but we really didn't have but we didn't have another D tackle that struck any fear in anybody. And so they go, okay, they've got some DNs that rotate. And then they've got this linebacker he just seems to be everywhere. To you as an offensive lineman, how terrifying is that when you go up against a team where they go, they bring him on blitzes and he's effective. And then they drop him in coverage and he erases our tight end. And then he's out there filling run lanes with authority, even though he's so small that you'd think he doesn't have that kind of pop to his tackle.
Yeah, he does so many great things with his frame. His instincts are terrific. I meant to bring that up in our show last night. We didn't pick that play to review, but he has terrific instincts. And, you know, a lot of guys will come through the line on a blitz and try to blow up a running back. And I guarantee if you tried to do that to Thurman Thomas, you'd get everything you could handle. I mean, that SOB blocked on pass. So that's not always the best strategy. And I think Matt takes the opinion of, I'm going to use some defensive end type of tactics when I rush up the middle. I'm not just here to punish the running back. My goal is to get the quarterback. He plays with such great leverage, instincts, speed. But beyond that, it's nice that he's getting the freedom to do it. I think Ed Oliver is playing fantastic. And I don't kid around. I think Ed, you know, I said at the beginning of the season, he better produce this year. But he's improved his stock considerably. I'm a believer. I love the pick. But I, you know, I don't kid around. He needed to play better, and guess what? He is. I think Addison's playing really well. I think Epinesa needs to improve quickly. Rousseau, I think he's passable right now. I don't think he's flashing as much as I had hoped. Jerry Hughes still looks good. Really, the whole front four, as they rotate, looks strong. Harrison Phillips is really coming up. Star Latulele, although doesn't strike fear, his serviceable purpose has been, you know, when he's been available, has made Ed Oliver a better player.
It's funny because I remember from the summer when we were talking about defensive linemen and we were talking about this concept of being on the breadline, as you put it. He said, listen, guys, who if you don't produce, but you're just here and the team isn't inclined to cut you, you're on the breadline. And nobody wants to be there. So,
no. So
looking at this team, it seems like there's guy like it almost felt like Harrison Phillips was kind of on that trajectory. But over the last month and a half of football, he's really stepped it up. It was felt in this game. It was.
Yeah, you know, and that's a feel thing. I mean, he started out not getting enough reps to get into a groove and developing what works best for him leverage wise. So the more reps he's gotten, the better he gets. I mean, that's just the way it is. I would say that Spencer Brown is following that same track. You know, if you're not in the game, the expectation for you to go in and perform, especially in the interior, I just think you're silly if that's your expectation, because so much of that is experience and feel. And look, they don't practice with pads on at this late in the season. They probably don't practice with pads on at full speed in the third week of the season. So there's nothing that can replace game time experience, but it's like filling up a bottle, right? So you need to fill it up. You learn more. Your peripheral vision improves. You see these keys that the offense has when they line up, differences in stances by the offensive line, studying your playbook, knowing their tendencies. And without the reps in a live game, it just really gets hard. So there's no shock, no surprise that a guy with enough talent, who's eager enough, who's exciting enough, who wants to be a part of something bigger than himself, is going to improve. And that's what we've seen.
So I'm gonna wrap this with two questions. The first one, where the Buffalo Bills were to start the season in the trenches to where they are now at this point in the season, is it fair to say that they've come a long way? I think that they're better on the whole than they were previously. So that's my opinion. I think that, to your point, the subtraction of Cody Ford, the fact that Darrell Williams is doing very well at guard, the Rick Bates, the fact that left guard has been this kind of turnstile with three different players manning that job, and yet it hasn't yet killed us, and they're finding a way. And in fact, you could argue Rick Bates is actually doing a really solid job. Do you agree with me in just kind of this feeling, as again, I don't know nearly as much as you do about this stuff, that those two units, which are pretty much, Chris, they're, you win and lose in the trenches.
I think your question is going to be, are we peaking at the right time?
Yes.
Or do we have the pieces in place? And, you know, as a look back, I would say that the defensive front seven, or it's six now, right? It's the defensive front six because everybody runs out of
nickel. Yep.
So the front six, I think, started defensively kind of a house on fire, high expectations. It's pretty fun stuff to watch. They slumped a little bit, in my opinion. Production, excitement, pressure, sacks. I don't look at the numbers. I go by feel. And I'm wrong. Somebody has a statistic. Fine. Mail it to me. But the problem with the offensive line is I think that, you know, they're not a disaster as everybody wants to, you know, scream on Twitter or wherever else, you know, because they want likes or fights or whatever the hell it is. It's never been a disaster. It's just been okay. And sometimes individual performances were not good, bordering on bad. So you had a front four playing really well and an offensive line that just couldn't gel. And now we ended up with this, you know, by injury, by luck, by benching, you know, a rotation that looks pretty good. And you see them ascending. And at the same time, for whatever reason, the front four or six defensively is ascending. And this is the time when you want to do that. When nobody really has any real concerns about Edmonds and Milano. I mean, they don't. I mean, just that Milano stays healthy. And our secondary... I mean, I think everybody probably had us, you know, booked for dead when we lost Trey White. And lo and behold, the next guy in, the next two guys in, filling the space, have been remarkable, remarkably good. Nothing short of that. I mean, they've been solid. So we're peaking at the right time. We have the right people in place. For me, I want to see more technique, tenacity, ferocity from the front four on pass rush and obvious passing situations. I'm seeing a little too much jittery, read, burst kind of thing. Attack mm-hmm. a shoulder like Ed Oliver does. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. On the offensive line, yeah, look, you can be assignment perfect and you can win. And if we can win and be assignment perfect on 80% of our snaps, and that's not too much to ask, then I don't think anybody stops Beasley and Diggs and Gabe, right?
Yeah.
So you can analyze the season any way you want, but if you can protect the quarterback and run the ball, and if you can defend the run and get after their passer, you win.
That's the game. That's it.
That's the game. And we're peaking at the right time. So I'm optimistic, but I almost rather the Chargers were coming in 10-degree weather, beat up, beat to death after that game, than having a team that got bit by a dolphin who's historically a solid performer,
yeah.
You know, coming in here with some bravado trying to prove something. I don't like it, but that's what we get.
That's the hand. And then the last question before I let you go, real quick. The last time you and I did one of these together, you talked about what it meant on our podcast about the team reaching out and kind of mending fences and bringing you back in and making you feel valued as an alumni. And then you get into podcasting and now you're doing this and you're interacting with fans and you're watching Bills games and you're, what is it? I guess, what does it mean to you for us to be in this position? Is it different than years past? Is it different for you now that you're in this thing with the rest of us?
Well, look, I don't think it was going way back. It wasn't that they did anything on purpose.
No.
I just don't think that I shouldn't say that. I don't think most organizations had a real dedicated alumni department. So you left, you were just kind of gone, you know, floating out into the ether. So the fact that it was a constant, conscientious, concentrated effort to bring back guys. And that was fun because it was such a big part of my life, and staying connected to it is enormously satisfying. Being part of like this content creator business now is fun because we're winning or we have a chance to win. I mean, it would have been murderous if people were doing podcasts 12 years ago.
Yeah, we started back during the Rex Ryan era because we thought that that's when the winning would start. Yeah, that's where we cut our teeth.
No, but I mean, it made it easy to not make an effort to leave my house to go to a bar where the Bills were playing because my expectations were so low. And now I'm like, okay, they have better wings. This is a better crowd. Here I get the audio. There I don't. And I'm making an effort now, like, you know, I'm telling my wife, I'm going to the Bills game. That's just 3 hours on Sunday that I won't be, you know, doing home improvements. So it's really been a fulfilling point in my life, being on Twitter and the Bills Mafia and engaging with fans. It's fun. I mean, look, we're not curing cancer. We're not feeding the world. But it's been a healthy, happy diversion. And, you know, it's been – thanks for having me on your show.
Of course.
I love going on the shows. I love going on my show. And, you know, I think we have a chance, right? So that's all you ask for is
that's
a chance.
It. Just five, give me a
five,
shot.
6 years ago, you just said we had no chance.
This is – that we were talking about it. This is what we've been – this game that we have ahead of us is what we've been playing for since I've been a season ticket holder, for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You're just happy to be here and be a part of it. And I'm glad that you're a part of it, John. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social and where they can find your show?
I just had a funny thought. I was trying to think of like the people that were continually trying to get people to re-up their season's tickets during the awful drought. I mean, like, hey, we're having a pancake breakfast for all fans.
And that was me. I was the sucker who was like, yeah, give me those pancakes. I will be here with bells on.
For every single season ticket renewal, you're going to get a $10 off coupon for Tops.
Oh, man. It's terrible.
Go to Dashes on Hurdle and say Buffalo Bills and get 4% off your
And I kept telling my friends, I go, guys, don't quit on me, because one of these days we're going to get a home playoff game. One of these days.
Yeah. Well, that was last year, and now again this year. Yep. You can find me on Twitter at John Fina. I engage. I'm unserious. I mostly lurk and make funny comments. All opinions are my own, not the reflection of my employer or my family or my God or my dog. Or anybody else. I'm on Instagram. I think I never open it, but I think I'm there somewhere.
Yeah, we're there with you.
And I'm on Facebook, and I don't go on Facebook, so don't expect a message. But if you engage me, I will engage back. I will like, I will try to comment, because it's fun. I'm not serious. And if I say something funny and you find it offensive, then comedy is dead. But I am here to revive it.
John Feeney's on Twitter, at John Fina. Host of the Off Tackle Show with Joe Miller, part of Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. He's already tweeted at us about his appearance on the show, and he did not like that I didn't offer him a beer. So
I can't wait.
Well, if the thing that we can't talk about. So if he gets in that thing that we were talking about that he told us, then I'll bring him a 12-pack of Seagram's.
Oh my God. If you showed up.
If that's how you would enjoy doing that, you have to have a fruity, low alcohol type of drink.
You would have to do that. Chris, if you could pull that off and just get a photo of it. Just get a photo of that. It would make my whole life. It would make my whole life. You'd probably, and Chris, if you met us at the seats with a black eye, it'd be one of the funniest things I ever saw in my life.
It'd be worth it. Why'd you get that black eye? I got hit in the face by Pro Bowl left tackle John Fina.
No, he's old. He can't fight anymore. No, I kid. Although I did walk up to him at the bar, and I was like, man, I'm like, you're small for a left tackle. And he just gets it. Oh, I love that you can break balls with that guy. He's a great person. I'm happy that we've gotten to know him. And that, again, he feels comfortable enough to break our balls back. I mean, it's camaraderie in this space, but it's also cool to just know that that's John Fina. Chris, your final thoughts on this game?
Fun win. I mean, wish it was there. More excited that I'll be there on Saturday, although no tailgating for me, because I'm coming straight from work.
Sure, because you got responsibles.
I got responsibles. It's like one of those like fun, like we already knew that we're, like, I know the division was on the line, but it was like one of those fun games, like felt like I was watching an exhibition against a lesser team, like somebody that's below Premier League. And you just get to like play with them, because it felt like first half was like, oh yeah, you guys are in it, and then at the second half, no, you're not. Get out of here, get out of here, peasant. Go back to New Jersey.
Go back to Hoboken.
Yeah, go back to Hoboken.
I don't know where I heard that, but Chris, what movie is that from? Like, it's a thing.
Call in if you know.
Someone yelling, go back to Hoboken! And I always thought it was funny. For me, I don't think I could have asked for a better Sunday. And no, not because the Bills were omnipotent and Josh Allen walked on water and we cruised to a victory that turned into a laugher. It was almost the opposite. The Bills were sloppy. They had mistakes. They played a really imperfect game on offense and still managed 27 points against a poor defense. That's the mark of a great football team. When everything bogs down, you still churn out the type of result that most teams would kill for. You once again blew a team out by double digits at the end of the day. The majority of their points and literally all of their yardage came on one singular broken play. And in the process, they emphatically declared that when it comes to the AFC East, the Buffalo Bills, by merit of the following, points four against when it comes to AFC East opponents, 29-12 on average per game. 13 total defensive takeaways, more than 135 yards per game better than their opponent on average, and a 5-1 record. They are, for the second straight year, the class of the AFC East. And for me personally, I got to see it happen with my dad there with me. Now, those of you who have been with us since the beginning, you know what that means to me. That moment, the fireworks going off, back-to-back, plastered all over every video board, the shout song blaring, just me getting to high five my friends, and I involuntarily hugged my dad. Now, Chris, my dad's kind of like you. He's not an outwardly emotional guy.
So he doesn't love you?
I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen him cry about anything, ever. I think that's correct, right? Like, I feel like a lot of parents do that for their children.
Yeah.
I hugged him anyway. I was like, I don't even know if he's going to respond. I don't know how he's going to respond to this. It doesn't matter. I need to hug you in this moment because it was perfect. It was everything. It sounds stupid, but it was everything I ever wanted out of this. I got to have a great day with some amazing people and then watch the game go the way that it went and end the way that it ended. I had to hug my dad and my wife goes, why didn't you take any pictures? How come do you have any pictures of you and your dad? I don't need them. That moment, this Sunday, it's seared forever in my memory. I don't need pictures to remember how perfect of a moment it really was. I mean, from that to the parking lot where we're all drinking Portuguese champagne with Hugo, his last moment, just at a Bills game in the United States, celebrating this thing. That's something I'm going to have for the rest of my life. Maybe someday I'll be lucky enough to have one of those with my kids. But I don't know. I just, like I said, I feel like I'm lucky enough to have gotten this one. Just this one amazing moment. That's it. Chris, that's all I have. I'm a lucky man. And, I don't know the last time I was more proud to be a fan of the Buffalo Bills. And I'm going to drink to that. Guys, we got to get out of here. I'm Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. That was John Fina. And this is your Rock Pile Report.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have the Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.